Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Cheryl Chumley addressing cultural topics through story.
You know, I just take readers through her childhood first so you can glean a sort of understanding. Why would a woman, why would a girl, why would a female want to have an abortion in the first place? Because I think, you know, it starts with a little bit of understanding, and that breeds compassion, and then that perhaps breeds a willingness to help.
Cheryl Chumley next. While Cheryl Chumley is known primarily for her nonfiction writing as a columnist for The Washington Times, she recently embarked on a Christian fiction series called Chloe's People. Spencer Dahlke contacted her to find out more.
Well, first question I kind of wanted to ask is, I noticed you're an opinions editor. What kind of encouraged you to start a novel series?
Well, it's a good question, because here I am in journalism. I've been in journalism for almost 30 years. And how did I get into fiction? It was really when I was younger, when I was a young girl, that fiction was everything I wrote. And I really believe that's sort of where God wanted me to. And then through different paths in life, I didn't write fiction for a very long time. And when I came out of the military and wanted to get back into writing, it was much easier. And I was always very interested anyhow in getting into journalism. So that's where the road led.
I feel that very much. I do the same thing. I love storytelling, and I studied journalism instead. Because it seemed like a great way to kind of that balance, you know, of something practical, but you can keep writing stories. Well, how do you think your experience studying journalism has kind of impacted your writing?
So journalism, and this is cool because you know the difference yourself, right? Journalism is very much formula, right? Who, what, where, when, why. Throw in a couple quotes, do some fact checking, do a little research, flush it out depending on the space constraints or space needs, and there you go. And in opinion writing in journalism is a little bit different. That's something that I've always wanted to do. I have my dream job right now, as a matter of fact, as an opinion writer at the Washington Times, opinion editor and writer. And, you know, it's more free-flowing, but it's still fact-based. Fiction is really cool, right? Because you can create your own world, create your own facts. And from there, you can bring in politics and culture and anything going on in the real world. So you can tap into what you see in the news. You can tap into your journalism world and bring it into your fiction world and, you know, do it in a way that maybe even nobody notices.
Following the Chloe girl, you know, kind of, I noticed you're writing kind of about these different vignettes from different parts of her life. You mentioned throwing maybe some things from the news into your stories can be kind of interesting. Is there particular news events that inspired you and made its way into the book?
Hector was basically conceived. I was thinking of children who are brought to America as illegals, right? Their parents bring them and the lives they lead. And it was sort of a funny foundation that brought me to Hector. But it still sort of prompt the question, what about those people who are brought here through no fault of their own when they're children? And, you know, they have a life. It's not their fault they're here. So that was definitely some sort of news hook that opened my eyes on Hector.
It's that time-tested and it's just perennial question of law versus, you know, and justice versus like mercy and like when one is more appropriate than the other, I suppose.
And, you know, you raise an interesting topic because that's something that I think many Christians sort of confuse, right? Love for fellow man and love for Jesus and doing things out of love for God versus upholding law and order of our country. So I think that's sort of an interesting intersection that many Christians struggle with.
Would you maybe be able to give us like a short like summary of Hector?
So Hector's about a little boy who was brought to this country by cartel members who murdered his parents in front of him. And he was forced to go into the drug trade as a condition of the cartel allowing him to live. And you learn early on that he was raised in a Christian home. His dad actually lived out the Christian faith in a very real example I go into in one chapter. But he lost that faith and he strayed from that faith in part because of the situation he was forced to live under. And at one point, he was even forced to pray to a fake god, a skeleton god. And so that's the groundwork. That's part that gets you through half the book. And then the other half is how he gets led back to God. And this is where Chloe comes back into the picture, because Chloe, as you know, the Chloe's People series, she is a notable figure in all five books.
I guess it makes sense that you name the series after her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, which is a biblical reference. It's actually in 2 Corinthians when Paul was talking about the dissensions that he had heard among church members from Chloe, with the people she had assembled at her home for Bible study. So it's a very, very small reference in that passage of the Bible, but that's where I got the idea from, Chloe's people.
I did not pick that up, but now that you mention that, I'll have to keep reading them with those eyes. Well, I guess considering the themes that you're exploring with Hector, where do you think Christians should start? I know it's a very political and it's very like a divisive topic, isn't it? But like as Christians, we can be one side or the other. Where do you think we should start to think biblically about the theme of illegal immigrants and measuring them by the law, but also like trying to love mercy at the same time?
Yes. So I would recommend that Christians first and foremost read the Bible. And you can see early on in the Bible that God established borders, right? The Garden of Eden. And he set up guards at the border, right? The flaming swords, the cherubim, and so forth. So there are border references throughout the Bible, beginning as far back as Adam and Eve. And, you know, law is something that comes from God as well as love. So you really can't have one without the other. You can't have true love unless there's some sort of discipline attached to that. Otherwise, it's just tyranny. It's just chaos. And I think Christians need to realize that when Jesus spoke to his followers, and he gave them commandments and recommendations how to best live, it was never going through the government to do something. It was always an individual one-on-one thing. So if you're looking on ways to love illegals while still upholding the laws of our country, you as an individual can dig into your own pockets and donate to charities that help those of less fortunate means of other nations.
I know you mentioned the theme for Hector was kind of examining what do we as Christians do with illegal immigrants. For Chloe, what do you think the theme is for that book? It seemed like it was just kind of like a basic testimony sort of a book. Is there something you're driving at with your Chloe novel?
Oh, with Chloe and with Chloe's people, the entire series is really targeted at the church. And let me give you the genesis of my whole thinking for all of Chloe's people. I was having lunch one day with a woman at the church I used to attend. And during the course of our conversation, we started talking about people who are less fortunate. She brought up somebody that through a friend she had known who had become a prostitute, and she made the remark, I don't know why she would have gone into that line of work. I don't know why she did that. And it struck me as very tone deaf to the circumstances of those who aren't raised in the church, right? If you're a Christian and you have been blessed enough to have a family that brought you to church from a very young age, you read the Bible as a family, you prayed as a family, and you were raised Christian, you're not going to understand somebody who is raised in a Chloe condition, right? You're not going to really understand somebody who is raised in a broken home with a drug addict, prostitution, working mother, and the gangs on the street become your caretakers. You can't just give those people a Bible tract and say, here, follow Jesus. So my intent with Chloe and with Chloe's people, all the series, is to sort of give a little bit of enlightenment of what goes outside the church, how they become what they are in life. And with that knowledge, maybe we as part of the church can do a better job of reaching these unfortunate souls and bringing them to Christ.
You have a lot of experience kind of like looking into unbelievers and looking into their backgrounds?
Oh, well, I was raised an atheist. At this age in life, I've still spent more years of my life as an atheist or agnostic or non-believer than I have as a believer. And as an atheist, as a non-believer in my past life, I saw all kinds of things. I participated in all kinds of things. And so I understand the atheist mindset, and I understand the draw of atheism, and I understand how if you're not raised to recognize God as God, then the Bible is silly. It's just a bunch of stories, and who needs God anyhow? And so when you have that sort of mindset, it's very easy to drift in life. It's very easy to take part of all the earthly things, right, that are out there. And when somebody comes and they tell you, here, take this Bible tract or come to church with me, you don't really get it. You don't understand it. And I just think that people in the church, if we know the dark side of life firsthand, then it makes us better able to reach those people who are still living in dark. And there are too many people in the church who don't understand that because they've been raised in the church. So through no fault of their own, I just hope that Chloe's people maybe can open their eyes to some of the issues.
It has struck me kind of to that point about as Christians, we have the framework to understand sin in the world, but right. It's interesting you mention that maybe we simplify sin to a place where it's simplistic, that ministry-wise, do you think maybe the church, I guess not to ask too much of a redundant question per se, but do you think the church maybe doesn't understand the fullness of the human condition, understanding God, the image of God in man and sin?
Yeah, because I think, and I was just listening to you talk, and it struck me that I think there is a real belief that if, you can stop drinking if you just want to enough, but it discounts, it dismisses and denies the years and years and years, perhaps, that led to the decision to drink in the first place, right? And that's really the root. And I understand that the church has missions and outreaches and so forth, but we don't do enough, because if we did enough, then there wouldn't be addicts roaming, homeless in the streets right now. And, we always need more people willing to do that work. And again, understanding the roots of sin, really understanding it, is, to me, the way to reach people who are wallowing in sin. I mean, just to add to it really quickly, who makes a better pastor to you, right? When I hear a preacher who talks about, for 20 years I was a drug addict and then God, called me to serve as a pastor and they're clean nowadays, that pastor really strikes a chord with me because they've seen it. They understand it. They know it. They're not just reading it from the Bible without firsthand knowledge of it themselves.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. I've observed that too. Just some of the best pastors I've known, the most kind, and the ones that savor the gospel the most are the ones that seem that they have, in fact, walked through the valley of the shadow of death.
I agree. And it's so inspirational, to see people when they come out of the dark into the light and they're just filled with that desire to tell people about their move from dark to light and all that God has done in their lives. It just touches everybody. It's such a great story.
My guest today is Cheryl Chumley. She's the online opinion editor for The Washington Times and the author of Chloe's People. We're discussing the first two novels, Chloe and Hector, although there are three more on the way, is my understanding. I take it the intended audience for your novel is churched people. from what you've mentioned of the themes?
Yeah, it is. You know, anybody could read it, right? But really, I have church people in mind as I write it.
What do you think the church today, what do you want them to take away from your novel?
First and foremost, the very real idea that there but for the grace of God go I, right? I mean, when you see somebody struggling in life, and we've all done it, we all think, wow, that's too bad. But really, it should be deeper. As a Christian, we should look at that person laying passed out on the curb. And we should think, that could easily be me. And truly believe that, because it really could be. And I think maybe... I think maybe people in the church have a sort of awareness of that, and they understand how that phrase is, but maybe not enough deeply, deeply believe it. Because if you deeply believe it, you feel driven to do something. You just feel like you have to do something about it. And that's what we need more of.
Yeah, like understanding the gospel every day, and like preaching the gospel to yourself every day and taking sin seriously. How do you think the church could do better in that regard?
That's a really good question, right? Because you go to church and there's a certain formula to it. You know, you have song time and then you greet people and then you do the tithe. And then, you know, I really think that it stems from an individual relationship with Jesus. And if you in the church really want to have a deeper walk with God, then the first thing you have to do, it's great going to church, but you really do need to have your one-on-one time. You need to read your Bible every day, and you need to just pray with God every day and ask, how can I bless somebody else today? Just start with that simple thing. What can I do today to bless somebody else? And trust that He will guide.
As someone who has now written two novels, mm-hmm. And have been writing since you were a little child, I think you mentioned a little earlier, how do you think, in your experience, Christians can honor God with the stories they tell?
Well, with truth, right? Because, you know, I don't know how many churches you've been to in life. I've been to a few. And one common theme that I seem to notice in all churches is that everybody's on their best behavior, right? Which is great. But it's very difficult when you're a newcomer to a church, or when you're an outsider to a church, or you're coming to church for the first time in your life. You just don't get the sense that the people in church are very real. It just seems everybody's, well, have a blessed day, and, you know, bless you. And, you know, then you go home and nobody really talks like that for the most part. So to be truthful, to be real, to be more genuine. And I think just by doing that, you automatically draw outsiders into the church.
Dangerous question, maybe. It seems to me that a lot of Christian media is not very entertaining. I don't know if you feel the same way, but how do you think Christians can tell better stories?
Well, I agree with you, what you said about Christian media. It's a little bit too saccharine for the most part, right? It's it's too, you know, the guy with the problem here, bless you, and everything's cured, everybody's happy. It just doesn't seem real. And honestly, my intention with Chloe's People was to move from these novels and get them into some sort of streaming or video version. Because I do think if Christian media did more realistic type of media, that it would really touch a lot more people. Because right now, it's sort of speaking to the choir, right? It's sort of speaking to those people who are already in the church who are looking for rated G for their families to enjoy. But it doesn't, and that's great. It really is. But if you want to expand on that, you really have to offer more. You have to offer things that those outside the church might be interested in seeing. But to do it in a way that shows them how God's glory can actually touch their own lives.
Something that I discussed with a few friends actually a few days ago, as we were kind of like talking about your book actually a little bit, is it seems like a lot of Christian media, God is very, very present in it, to a point perhaps that it almost seems preachy, like you mentioned. Do you think there's a way to write about God and make Him present in our stories in a way that is still honest and compelling, perhaps even to unbelievers?
Well, I can tell you there are many things in Chloe that are fact-based, things that might strike as a reader as being something of my imagination. But the way Chloe sees hearts everywhere, I see those every day. And I take those as little taps from God. And sometimes they're actually answers to prayers, depending on the context, you know, in my mind or in my prayers. Little messages that pop up throughout the day, whether on license plates, happens to me. I had that in Chloe, the first of Chloe's people, too. So there are things that actually happen if people just pay attention and have faith that God is working in your life if only you just listen.
How do you think Christians can train themselves to pay more attention to people and their hearts?
Well, believe, first off, right? You have to believe. You have to, you know, if you think God is distant and he doesn't have anything to do with your life, well, first off, I don't find that biblical because it says that God numbers the hairs on your head, right? So if he numbers the hairs on your head, then of course he pays attention to what job you do, what food you eat, who you hang with. I mean, he's there. And you know, second off, it says in the Bible that he will never leave nor forsake you. So God is there. He's there. He's right here right now with you and me, Spencer, right? I have no doubt about that. But I just think that there are too many Christians who don't believe that. And so really, it starts with faith.
I guess one last question for you. Is there anything else you'd like to mention about the books that you thought was that caught your attention as you were thinking about it? And maybe it would just be edifying for our listeners to know and chew on?
Well, the book, the third part of the series is called Lily, and I'm about halfway through that one, and that's about delving deep into abortion. So really, I want to tackle some tough issues that perhaps people in the church aren't accustomed to or comfortable discussing and that is never raised in church. So if you're just looking for fast and easy reads, maybe, to get a better understanding of how those in darkness got to the point they're in darkness, and then maybe how you can better help them, then that's why I wrote these books.
Mm-hmm. I know I said that was going to be the last question, but it did spark my mind. I did want to ask a little bit about what your future plans are with the books. You mentioned abortion is the next one.
Yes, that's Lily. You know, I just take readers through her childhood first so you can glean a sort of understanding. Why would a woman, why would a girl, why would a female want to have an abortion in the first place? Because I think, you know, it starts with a little bit of understanding and that breeds compassion. And then that perhaps breeds a willingness to help.
Cheryl Chumley, columnist for The Washington Times and author of the Christian fiction series, Chloe's People. Late last month marked a significant pro-life victory when the United States Supreme Court ruled 6-3 in favor of South Carolina's plan to defund Planned Parenthood. This decision clears a potential path for other states and even Congress to cease the use of taxpayer dollars toward the funding of abortion. Here to discuss that decision is Nicole Hunt, an attorney and life issues analyst with a focus on the family. Nicole, tell us about this case and why you believe it's so important.
Yeah, happy to. And I'll start by saying this year, the Supreme Court really was a blockbuster year for faith values. It was for the pro-life movement, which we'll discuss here. It was for parental rights and for religious freedom. I mean, we had so many important wins this last cycle, and the Supreme Court term just ended at the end of June. And of course, most of the most controversial ones don't come down until the last few days of the term. And so Medina v. Planned Parenthood was one of those cases. And usually those cases, when they come down, they'll come down either very close or they'll come down on philosophical judicial lines of ideology. And so what we saw in this Medina v. Planned Parenthood case really was a significant pro-life win. And we saw that breakdown, a 6-3 ruling, which represented the judicially conservative side of the court versus the one who's more likely to read into the law, rights that don't exist, a more judicial activist type of philosophy. And so what made this case so important was that South Carolina had passed a law to defund Planned Parenthood from its Medicaid reimbursements, the Medicaid program. And what the Supreme Court said was that that South Carolina had the right to do that. And so what made it so significant is that it really did create a pathway for other states to be able to use similar legislation like South Carolina's, and to know that there would be a constitutional path forward for those states to defund Planned Parenthood from the Medicaid program, and also a way for Congress to be able to permanently defund Planned Parenthood at the federal level.
So when you talk about defunding Medicaid, Medicaid reimbursements to Planned Parenthood, why is that significant?
The federal government pays out to Planned Parenthood about $500 million every year in Medicaid reimbursement. Now, what we know is that there's a federal law that says that tax dollars can't fund abortion. But what this is a roundabout way to subsidize abortion through these abortion service providers. So where Planned Parenthood is able to rake in funding from the federal government to pay for Medicaid services, they save money that they're going to go ahead and use to promote abortion policy. And we've specifically seen Planned Parenthood become much more active since Roe was overturned. They're trying to pass abortion amendments in every state. And usually, if you go to look at the financial records at the end of the day during these campaign efforts, you see that Planned Parenthood is one of the most biggest providers to the effort to try to pass these abortion amendments statewide. So it really is going to be very significant to Planned Parenthood, because they're going to have to reallocate, figure out how to come up with $500 million more worth of funding when we look at the bigger picture here of how much money is actually being sent to Planned Parenthood for these Medicaid reimbursements. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the reconciliation bill, which Congress passed earlier this month. And what we know was in there, pro-life community, they were advocating for Planned Parenthood to be defunded for a very long period of time. Instead, we got 1 year, but we celebrate that for 1 year, abortion providers are not going to be seeing Medicaid reimbursements. Now, this law has been, it's been held up in court. So right now, a federal court judge has put a stay in place to allow Planned Parenthood to continue receiving money for now. But we're going to see this move up towards the Supreme Court for another look at this, because it is important. It's Congress saying, Congress representing the will of the people, saying, we do not want to fund Planned Parenthood. And so what we're hoping to see is that federalism and separation of powers will see their due course, and the people's will through the elected officials in Congress will be able to defund Planned Parenthood for this coming year. But I will say, since we're on, you know, we're talking about Medina, what made Medina so important was that the Supreme Court justices, they really made a decision based on an important philosophical divide. There's the part of the court that honors the constitutional principles of the separation of powers and federalism and the proper role of the judiciary. So the question before the Supreme Court was, did Congress allow, in the language of the Medicaid Act, did they allow for a Medicaid recipient to be able to sue the state to go to any doctor that they want to? Or does the state have the ability to decide which doctors are qualified and which doctors are not? And so when so the Supreme Court looked at the actual language of the bill, they said Congress did not explicitly create a way for Medicaid recipients to sue. So they don't have that right. If Congress wants to go back and give them an explicit right to sue, then they can do that. But we're not going to read anything into the law. We're going to respect what Congress passed, and we're going to restrain ourselves from making policy that should be left to the people and to the people's elected representatives. So this really was a win for the Constitution, for the separation of powers, and for federalism, because it respects these constitutional principles.
Is there something at Focus on the Family? Is there somewhere they can go to keep up with
yes.
these things?
Yes, absolutely. So if you go to focusonthefamily.com, You'll find links there to The Daily Citizen, and it's the news arm of Focus on the Family, where we're digging into the issues and we're presenting them to our readers with a Christian worldview and trying to allow Christians to be able to think more critically so that we can live differently. And so go to focusonthefamily.com, find The Daily Citizen, and you can follow us for more information.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guests, Nicole Hunt, attorney and life issues analyst with Focus on the Family, and novelist Cheryl Chumley. She's a columnist for The Washington Times. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again on Monday at this same time for another edition of His People.